overwhelmingly the entirety of our caucus, except for a few whose judgment I respect, support the vision of Joe Biden.
U.S. lawmakers consider $1 trillion infrastructure package. It's Tuesday, September 28th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Chris Cascao in Washington. Find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, Afghan family resettles in U.S. Australian teens track COVID-19. Cycling for women's rights. It's all on today's VOA Asia. A time of intensity. That's what U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, a Democrat, is calling this week in Congress as lawmakers are expected to vote on a $1 trillion bipartisan infrastructure bill, but also consider the Democrat-backed $3.5 trillion sweeping social spending package, core to the Biden administration agenda. Michelle Quinn reports.
The Biden administration's domestic agenda faces a major test this week. Congressional leaders are negotiating over the timing of voting on a bipartisan infrastructure bill, which would increase spending for roads, bridges, and other projects. Some progressive members of the Democratic Party say they won't vote for that $1 trillion package unless the bigger $3.5 trillion social spending bill, President Joe Biden's Build Back Better, also comes up for a vote. The smaller bill is likely to come up first, and the cost of the bigger package will likely be cut as negotiations proceed, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi told ABC's This Week.
This isn't about moderates versus progressives. Overwhelmingly, the entirety of our caucus, except for a few whose judgment I respect, support the vision of Joe Biden, and we will make progress on it this week.
Yet another issue looms. The government could start running out of money sometime in mid-October, according to a recent report. Congress will have to raise the debt limit so that it can borrow money to pay for a wide array of spending already approved, including the military and Social Security. Last week, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, a Republican, said the Republicans are not going to help the Democrats raise the debt ceiling, arguing that the Democrats should pass it on their own since they are poised to pass the $3.5 trillion bill, which many Republicans oppose.
Don't play Russian roulette with our economy. Step up and raise the debt ceiling to cover all that you've been engaged in all year long.
But much is at stake. A partial government shutdown could happen later this week if Congress doesn't pass spending legislation. The Senate is expected next to consider a bill which passed the House that would extend spending limits, raise the debt, and provide aid to communities hit by natural disasters and to Afghan refugees. Michelle Quinn, VOA News.
We invite you to read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the VOAnews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. Malaysia pledges spending and green goals in five-year economic plan. China tells effeminate male celebrities to man up. North Korea says hope is alive for peace and summit with South. China's Xi warns of grim Taiwan situation in letter to opposition. Indian farmers give renewed push to demand for scrapping farm laws. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the VOAnews.com website. You're listening to VOA Asia on this Tuesday. Nimat Ullah Haghouri is an Afghan father of seven and a recipient of the Special Immigrant Visa, or SIV. He had one-way tickets to the U.S. for himself and his family on August 16th, but one day before their trip, the Afghanistan government collapsed. The family finally made its way to America nearly 2 weeks later. Anush Avetishyan met with them in Washington, D.C., and has their story.
Nimatullah Haghari's thoughts keep going back to Afghanistan on August 15th, when the government collapsed and the Taliban took over his country. Haghari, a special immigrant visa holder, was scheduled to depart Afghanistan with his family just one day later, but the Taliban canceled their flight. He spent 12 desperate and traumatic days in Kabul before getting a flight out. Nimat Haghari filmed these shots, oppressive heat, crowds of people, panic and screaming. Many were injured by barbed wire used on top of fences around the Kabul airport.
My one daughter and one, my son, they were walking from the wire, you know, the wire, from no shoes in her feet, their feet.
When the family reached the entrance to the airport, Haghari had to leave part of his family there and go back into the sea of people looking for his two sons and nine-year-old daughter who got lost in the crowd.
I thought that she died because I already I saw three kids they were died. Got 6 hours that I found him and my two kids again. So when I saw my daughter, he was alive, I was very crying. I was very crying. I was very happy. I thank God that he is alive.
When Haghari found his 16-year-old son, the boy was unconscious.
Because there was no air, and the sun was shining. So I took him to the outside and gave him water. After 1 hour, he was breathing.
It took Haghari 4 days to make it inside the airport. By then, his wife and four of their children managed to get on a plane and were on their way first to Qatar and then to the U.S. The whole family finally reunited 12 days later in Washington, D.C., where they were staying at a hotel with other Afghan refugees while awaiting more permanent accommodations. Other refugees have been redirected to military bases in Virginia, Texas, Wisconsin, and New Jersey. The children don't want to talk about what happened back home, but they're happily anticipating a new life in the U.S.
I really want to start playing football with my brothers, so going to school and finding some friend, so because I'm really alone here.
While they were waiting accommodation, the International Organization for Migration has provided Haghari and his family with food. Volunteers and locals are bringing items to the hotel. Most refugees arrived in the U.S. with nothing. Haghari is worried about their future and that the Taliban will harm his relatives who are still in Afghanistan.
They know my father. They know my brothers. I left Afghanistan. After this, they were searching the family. Instead of me, he will take them. He will take my father, my brother.
Haghari says the children are being hurt most by the turmoil. They start every day with a walk together. They breathe in, they talk, they learn to live without fear. Haghari and his family were relocated to California, where they will begin to build a new life. And the main thing Haghari tries to teach his children there is that the worst is behind them. Anusha Vitisyan for VOA News, Washington.
Still ahead on VOA Asia, teenagers in Australia build one of the country's most visited COVID-19 tracking websites. Happening now in Asia, China's foreign ministry said on Monday that the return of Huawei executive Meng Wanzhou was because of the unremitting efforts of the Chinese government. Beijing also said two Canadians who were released confessed guilt before being granted bail for medical reasons. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. Three teenagers have been revealed as the brains behind one of Australia's most authoritative COVID-19 tracking sites. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
In the pandemic, numbers are everything. New South Wales Premier Gladys Berejiklian is one of millions of Australians tracking the vaccination rates, hoping to get the numbers high enough that lockdowns can end. She gave an update in Sydney on Monday.
Pleasingly, we've officially passed the 85% first dose vaccination in New South Wales.
Tracking a mountain of statistics is complex and time-consuming. One of the most comprehensive COVID-19 monitoring sites in Australia is run by three teenagers in Melbourne. The website COVIDBaseAU has been collating coronavirus statistics since April 2021, breaking down Australian and global data on infections, hospitalisations, deaths and vaccinations. It was a project that started as a hobby for teenagers interested in coding and the media. Their website has become a trusted source of information. The site is run by 15-year-old Jack and his two friends.
It's important in providing a sort of centralized and easy way to access a lot of the data. And I think in making sure that we track the data every single day, we're sort of able to give a lot of context behind all the data, which some government sites might not be able to do.
For months, the boys wanted to be anonymous, but they were revealed as the brains behind COVIDBaseAU when they posted a picture on Twitter after they'd been vaccinated. Jack and his friends say that despite the demands of their tracking website, they're keeping up with their schoolwork. Millions of Australians in Canberra, Melbourne and Sydney remain in lockdown as Delta variant infections continue to rise. About 97,500 coronavirus cases have been recorded in Australia since the pandemic began. 1,231 people have died. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Finally on VOA Asia, women in Turkey's Kurdish-majority province Diyarbakir pedaled their well-decorated bikes to raise awareness about female cyclists in traffic. VOA's Mahmut Bozarshan filed this report, narrated by Izel Şahinkaya.
Wearing colorful outfits, dozens of women in Diyarbakir, Turkey, gathered in a public park to cycle as part of a campaign in 151 cities across 30 nations. It's called Fancy Women Bike Ride, and the campaign aims to promote urban cycling and awareness that women also ride bicycles, not just men, despite misperceptions in some countries.
I am an active cyclist, but there is no such bike awareness in Diyarbakir. When they see a bicycle, they honk directly. We want them to put on the brake, not honk. There is a gender perception in the society as women do not ride bicycles, and we want to end it.
Some cyclists decorated their bikes before the tour with balloons, dolls, or purple ribbons symbolizing women's struggle. Participants said the tour aims to challenge the societal pressure on women in their everyday life. During the tour, women chanted some slogans and sang songs. The campaign was initially organized in 2013 in Izmir, a western province of Turkey, for World Car Free Day. Then, it expanded worldwide as a women-only grassroots cycling event.
This event is a grassroots movement known as Fancy Women Bike Ride that started in Izmir and opened up to the whole world. There is no association with any group, and everyone here identifies as individuals. It has some goals, such as cycling, showing the visibility of women in society, leaving a clean world for the future, and addressing the climate crisis.
However, women had to ride their bikes under heavy security measures by the police because of reactions from some conservative religious groups. After the cyclists arrived at their finishing site, they continued their day with cheerful dances. Women's rights in Turkey have become increasingly controversial since the government withdrew from the Istanbul Convention, an international treaty to fight violence against women. For Mahmut Bozarslan in Diyarbakir, Turkey, Ezel Şahinkaya, VOA News.
Read and see more on this story at VOA Asia Facebook. Thank you for listening to VOA Asia. Like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. You can also find us on Instagram, YouTube, and at voanews.com. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, Amy Hybels, and Doug Bernard. I'm Chris Cascale in Washington. Enjoy your day.